performance and quality improvement, service research, evaluation, leadership, workforce, and health informatic types of projects. He is also the PI of a number of projects funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and CDC. He has his undergraduate degree in liberal arts from Wittenberg University and a master's degree from Kent State. A lot of people from Ohio, huh? All right. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'll show my overview slide and then I'll sit down. ASTO, as you know, is the national association representing state and territorial health officials and their agencies and their staff. And we affiliate with over 20 affiliate associations that represent chronic disease directors, maternal child health directors, all employees of state health agencies. In this presentation, the profile that we're talking about, Volume 2, is the second profile. The first was done in the data collected in 07, the report released in 08, which is Volume 1. So I'll be talking a little bit about both of those. This is really core data and context that ASTO uses. So I encourage you to look at the profile report, not only of ASTO and NACHO, but there's lots of other topics in there that relate to the workforce in context that I think really bridge some of the questions that you're asking here today. We have used extensive use of this data in policy settings at the federal level and congressional context. A lot of interest in what ASTO's members have to say about their workforce. We also think there's lots of opportunity for public health systems and services research. And so in a couple of months, you'll see both the 07 and the 2010 data online available for mining purposes, so you can just match it up with some data set and do something wonderful with it. Enumeration, we think this is the only regular enumeration survey of the state public health workforce, and so we're excited about that. I'll just make the comment that the public health workforce is elastic, it is not static. It is an elastic concept. It's affected by geography, time, circumstances, economy. So this idea that Cynthia mentioned that it will be an approximation is just something we're going to have to recognize as part of the story. So the key findings on the state public health workforce that I'll be talking about are the number of employees, salary range, employee and fringe benefits, workforce development, characteristics of state health officials, much like local health officials, and then a teaser at the end on effective budget cuts and putting that in the context of where we are today. So a little bit of background. So I've combined two kinds of surveys here in this presentation. In the left bubble is our profile survey. It's a longer survey. There's over 300 questions. It's an online survey. It's done in a modular format, so when it gets to the state health agency, they split it out. So if it's got informatics questions, they're done by an informatics team, HR, fiscal, whatever the case may be. As I mentioned, it's the only regular enumeration survey. It's funded by CDC and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, so my hat's off to them for their support. We do get 100% response rate from states and D.C. The 90% response rate is when you include our eight territories. We get two of the eight in the 2010 survey. So that, and if you look at the profile survey itself, you'll see the interesting data on the two territories, so I encourage you to look at that. And between the two times, we've revised it to improve the clarity of questions and the breadth of the data collected. The budget cut survey are sort of shorter surveys that are done in a modular fashion to really track the economic recession since it started and its impact in governmental public health employees. And so you'll hear some of the sobering news that's a part of that story. So here's the key findings. We have over 100,000 FTEs. Over 60% of state health agencies use the core competencies for public health professionals. State health officials themselves have significant public health experience before taking office. That's sometimes a wonderment to some people. There's over 12,400 vacancies, an average of 288 per state, but I'll tell you that they're only seeking to fill 15% of those vacancies, which gets at the earlier question someone asked about the vacancy counting and what that really means. A growing number of employees are eligible for retirement. And then budget cuts have resulted in workforce reductions and program cuts. So what about the number of employees at state health agencies? Total number is around this number. It's stayed pretty consistent. When you talk about full-time equivalents, it drops a little bit, and you'll see some of the difference between those part-time and contract employees when I talk about those. That's the mean and the median for health agencies, but I'll explain that a little bit more in a few minutes. Here's that breakdown of part-time, contractual, and hourly and temporary work employees, sort of what that looks like in a state health agency when you think about the total number of FTEs. And here we have the FTEs, the percentage of states that have fewer than 1,000 employees. That's the majority of the majority have fewer than 1,000 employees, and then you can see how that spreads across over time in comparison between 07 and 10. Number of FTEs by state population just gives you sort of a glimmer. It looks like there's more the smaller states. That's probably has some logic to it. State population served, this is the small, medium, and large states as you look at those numbers. So I really liked from the original enumeration study in 2000 that opportunity to see how many FTE per 100,000, and you could sort of match up your state where you were on the barometer. So I really think we need to refine towards that in looking at our surveys here. Salary range and employee fringe benefits. Administrative and clerical personnel make up the largest portion. This is a nice slide to look at because it really gives you from top to bottom sort of the number of employees in each one of those classifications. And people seem to forget that we have that administrative and clerical function in government that supports all of the work that we try to do in public health. And so, well, you know, what are their workforce needs, I sometimes wonder, and what are we doing for them in terms of their public health growth? The public health nursing still remains strong in terms of discipline, but then where they work, as we've noted here before, varies across time. You can see some of those minimum and maximum salary ranges, and then just see where epidemiologists fall, where managers fall, informatics specialists fall, dentists, etc. Here's the salary ranges and fringes for some of the leadership positions and the number of states reporting on those positions. And let's talk a little bit now about workforce development. So public health competencies, 61% of the states reported that they have look at their employees through the core competencies lens in terms of what that work is. So we were having a conversation earlier about train and how to drill more down into that functional versus occupational classification issue, and the core competencies would be a cool way also to think about that. And here's some other competencies that state health agencies use. To match up with the local health officials, we've put in here a little bit of information about the state health officials. The average official has worked in public health for 15 years before taking that position. But there's a new story after this data was collected, because this was before the gubernatorial elections, so I'll be mentioning a little bit about that change that's occurred and why the next survey will be a different one. So in the regions of the country, here's what the state health officer salary looks like and what the medians are. So who determines that salary? In many cases, it's the governor. Sometimes it takes state legislature approval. Occasionally state pay scale, and the idea of boards of health are not so common at the state level, much more common at the local level, but in a few cases that salary is determined at those levels. And here's the educational attainment of state health officials. Majority have physician degrees. There's a large group with MPHs. And you see that sort of edging up there a little bit on those two, which is kind of nice to see. Here's the new state health officials, 30 new state health officials since those gubernatorial elections in 2010. So that's a huge turnover in terms of ASTA's membership. I will tell you they are a very active group. They have been active participants in ASTO, and it's really nice to see their engagement. So a total of 49,000 jobs or more and counting have been lost in state and local health agencies since 2008. So as you see these numbers for this modular survey that I mentioned, where the states are reporting on a select set of questions regarding budget cuts, these are the state health agencies reporting budget cuts. So now we're pretty close to 50. There's a few states that are still flush, but not very many. What are the strategies they're taking? Travel restrictions, delayed hires, hiring freezes, cutting vacant positions. furloughs. There was enough furlough days in the last year that it was the equivalent of a loss of 500 full-time employees just in furlough days alone. And so that's just lost work. It's just hard to fathom what some of this is happening. In terms of capacity, there's been layoffs, entire programs cut, the furlough that I mentioned, loss of staff by attrition. If you leave, that position leaves with that employee. And then certainly everybody is seeing the effects of reduced services based on reduction in workforce. And here's where some of those vacancies are occurring. Retirement eligibility is growing. Here's what we project out based on our feedback from HR directors and state health agencies, that this is the eligibility for retirement. I think the economy is defining who chooses retirement, so eligibility doesn't necessarily mean that that's actually going to follow, that a retirement will occur. And this is the sad story of the budget cut scenario. Here are the percentage of state health agencies in number reporting cuts in program areas. I asked myself the question, what does core public health when you see something like this? And so states are asking themselves that question, what are we preserving? What employees are we preserving? How are we coalescing around this? And then here's just the three states' examples of sort of the programs eliminated and reduced in just three state examples. So all of this data is available on our website. Again, the profile survey is much larger than workforce, but it really is the only enumeration. Lots of detail in there, lots about the public health activities. If you need to reach me, just contact me. If you see the bottom bar there, that's where the report will be on the website. I'd like to introduce Dr. Rivka Liss-Levinson. If you would just raise your hand, please. She's our Director of Survey Research. She works with Katie Sellers, our Senior Director for Research and Evaluation. Rivka can answer some questions for you. I certainly want to acknowledge these folks who have helped us pull this information together. Nikki Lawhorn is the one that went in through all the data tables and did all the data cleaning. What a nasty job that was. And so we really appreciate her work. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. So thank you very much.
We have just a few more minutes, and I think I wanted to talk about some of the points that have been brought up, and certainly on the federal workforce, it doesn't get any better. So this is the local and state challenges. One of the things that we were talking about in terms of the federal workforce, we wanted to try to address that from within the federal side. Because, of course, I'm an epidemiologist and commissioned corps, so I'm a double whammy in terms of not being counted appropriately. But hopefully one of the things that we want to do is to be able to go through the various data sources that we have at CDC and mirror whatever is being done by our colleagues at ASTO and NACHO so that we can make sure that whatever classifications, whatever strategies we come up with, it's consistent so that we can compare the numbers across the board. BLS was mentioned, and that's something that we will also work with to try to use the rich data. Again, we're not sure exactly how well it can match, but one of the things that we will try to look at is to see how we can try to tease out the public health components of whatever it is that BLS collects. So with that said, we can try to see if there are any additional questions. Yes. that being said, it would be good to try to find out if how that's changed, because that was a while back when those numbers were gathered. Well, and it would still need to be shown, because I think that if it's schools of public health are preparing the public health workforce, and if we can't track and make sure that who are we training in schools of public health, and then for them to go into these vacancies in the state and local health departments or other places, we need to make sure that we have a pretty good connection between the two. I think Hugh, you had a question about
it. It's terrific to see HRSA in this mix as well. That's a welcome addition to CDC's leadership, and so thanks to HRSA for doing that. Quick question for Jim and Carol. Cynthia talked about the harmonization project. Is it your vision that in the next iteration there will be an enumeration from state and local at the same time, collecting data around the same type of referencing? Index cases and so forth, are these really harmonized surveys yet?
You know, I would have to say that harmonization is a process. The last surveys that ASTO and NATO did in 2010, we did a few months apart. I think you guys we launched yours in April, we launched ours in September. So same calendar year, so that was good. We don't use exactly the same occupations, because there are some occupations that are important in state health departments that are perhaps less important in local health departments, but where we have the same occupations, we use the same name for that occupation and we use the same definition for that occupation. We're also trying to get at the messy issue of trying to avoid double counting in cases in the centralized states, where the people who are working at local health departments are employees of the state health agency, and making sure that we're not counting, that we can back them out of ASTO.
Since I serve on the National Advisory Board, you know I knew the answer to the question before I asked it, but I want to commend the two of you and your organizations for doing that. It is often possible to just go off and do your own thing, and the spirit of collaboration has just been effective.
This question.
So I have a corollary to earlier questions. Perhaps I just misunderstood Carol's comment. So when you were talking about the findings, say nurses who serve as health educators or epidemiologists, how exactly do you characterize them in your survey? Because if one is advising a student in training, would I say go to nursing school, or would you take a master's degree in
And you're definitely right that the reason there are definitely different ways you could decide to do this kind of enumeration. If you're interested really in nurses and where they end up in the workforce, you would do a very different survey from the one that NATO did. You would, you know, find all the nurses and ask them what they're doing. What we're trying to count in our survey is people who are serving in particular functions. So for us, we want to know how many health educators you have, and we don't know how many of those are nurses and how many of them are other kinds of individuals. So it's sort of the purpose for the story.
Joan?
Across local health departments, when you look at funding levels per 100,000 population and staffing levels per 100,000 population, you see a huge range across the United States. So I think that's probably quite amazing.
And then the next would be directed because the local and basically presenting information and speak about the realities that
question back.
I'm not sure I understood the very, very last part of Dr. Chalky's question, so I hope to not be repeating. Is anyone thinking about building on this in order to figure out a way to talk about what levels of service the public needs?
That was not a plant, by the way. So one of the things that I wanted to finish off, and until there's any other questions, is we're doing the counting. And so what happens after the counting? We're not just counting for the sake of counting. I mean, as Jim and Carolyn have said, there's a reason behind this. And I think one of the things in terms of what is our interest at CDC as well as in HRSA is that the sort of public health training, the recruiting, the retention, and the continuing education of the workforce that is there, this, we can't do any of those until we have a somewhat accurate count or estimate of the number of in the workforce. And so having that, I think, would allow us to be able to target specific training, specific activities, and interventions to make sure that the folks who are doing the jobs that they were doing, plus additional ones that have either been subsumed under their current role, have been taken out because of budget cuts or whatever that may be, if now they're getting additional responsibilities, that they have the proper training for them to be able to perform their job adequately. So that's really the ongoing process that once we have the enumeration, that this is sort of the first piece of the puzzle as we move forward. So stay tuned. In terms of the activities. I think you had a question? Yes.
So, in addition to the modeling you're talking about, would also be trying to understand what the community sort of need in terms of the demand for types of public health workers. So when we're talking about populations of 100,000, if they're young, you need a whole different set of services, if you will, than if they're more aged. And given the nature of our population in the next few years, we have to decide whether there's a bunch of mature people in one community versus another. So is that also sort of the model?
Well, I think that will be some things that we will take from our ASTO and Nature colleagues, because they're the ones that really, in the front lines, that would be able to address what's the makeup of the work, the workforce in the health department that they have, as they unfortunately showed of the various departments that have been either cut back or completely closed. That is a budget
ramification. Budget-driven and not need-based, and so oftentimes they take out things because it's a convenient way to cut off X number of dollars versus is that the demand in my community that I need to meet? And so
right. But I think that's where we all have to work together to be sort of advocates for additional resources, whether they be in funds, personnel, and whatnot. So, and I think that this information that we're getting hopefully will continually help them to try to drive home that message. Maybe you can.
I'd say we can't know that for sure. What we instruct our respondents to do is we tell them they can do two things. If it clearly is divided among two positions, they may split the FT. So if you have someone who spends half of their time as a nurse and the other half of the time as an epidemiologist, they may split it up that way. Or, in some cases, it's still too complicated, so we tell them categorize that worker on what they do for the majority of their job. So that's what we ask them to do. If they've done a lot of overcounting, we can see that because we compare the total of the FTEs occupation-wise they give us versus their total FTEs. So, we can tell if they've really done a lot of double counting.
And the anecdotal storyline is that 3 years ago, they were doing one job,
Now they're doing two
jobs. Right. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming.